Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is, we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Robin is with me again.
Hello, everyone.
Twice in a row, we're going to talk about the Gold Job episode of Leverage. This one was directed by Mark Roskin and it was written by Joe Hortua. So, in this episode, Hardison decides he's going to take the reins and lead the team in taking down a corrupt brother and sister who run a gold, what is it, like it's a gold exchange or
They
cash for
run cash
gold
for gold.
company. And yeah, things don't go exactly like he plans. I love these guest stars that we have in this episode. So the siblings, who I imagine are twins. They only call them siblings, but I think that they're twins. I don't.
That's possible. They do specify that he is the older brother,
Okay.
but
But you know twins.
there's an older twin.
Yeah. And they're always like, I'm older than you by 2 minutes. So the older brother, Tommy, is played by Todd Stashwick. And Barbara, or B, as he calls her all the time, is Sasha Burice. And they're just like delightfully evil.
Yeah, they're also. I looked up what they'd been in because they both looked a little familiar, and it's because both of them were on Supernatural. At
Yes.
one point, she was a demon bartender at one point, and he played Dracula,
Dracula
which
in
I was
like
really
season
confused at.
three.
I was like, wait, is Dracula on Supernatural? What? And it's the black and white episode where like movie monsters come to life. He plays Dracula in that, but
Oh.
he also was on Buffy and Angel. He played the demon at the end of season one of Angel that has like the weird bronze mask who blows up Wesley and sends Cordelia into all the dreams, like Vorka, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's him. And I looked up a picture of him and I was like, yeah, that could be the same. All you can see is his chin. And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty distinctive chin.
They're missing out on his eyebrows. Like, what a shame.
He's very intense looking.
Yeah. And
She's
she's been in a lot of things. Like, she's been in all of the Hangover movies. Because I think
Oh.
she's the spouse. I think she's the one who's.
I've never seen a Hangover movie.
I've seen the first two, I'm not gonna lie, but it's been a long time. And I want to say that she's like the woman who's getting married to whoever the guy is who's getting married that they're on the bachelor party for in the first one. I could be wrong, but she doesn't have any IMDb credits after 2013. So I hope she's doing well.
Well, if she was in The Hangover, she probably got some of that good Hangover money.
Right?
And hopefully she's just out living her best life.
Just living her best life. And Yeah, and she's been in a couple other things. She was on Just Shoot Me, and she was, oh, she had a, like, a bit part in Legally Blonde. She was, her character was another girl. Which is hilarious. So, yeah, so she's Barbara. And we start the episode with one of those wonderful local commercials for a local business, and we all have them, and we all love to hate them because they come on and they're either annoying or they're just really catchy. And You sent me the one from your town.
Yeah, so I live in the DC area, and if anyone wants another example, if you YouTube Woodbridge Golden Pawn, you will see many examples. I just sent you one. There's a lot of them. They always run before, back when movie theaters were a thing, they would run before the movies. It sort of interspersed with the much better commercials. So that was always fun.
I love it. I love my favorite person, because they keep just repeating the name of the store, is the last guy who, like, comes out with all the cash and he doesn't say it correctly.
Yeah. But he does, like, the robot while holding a big wad of, I think, fake cash.
Yeah. And they obviously were like, we're not going to do another take of this where you're not messing up the name of our store. It's fine. Cut.
I gotta get the camera back to my AV club. So listeners, if you can't imagine what a bad local commercial looks like,
Woodbridge besides Golden the one at the beginning of this episode,
we'll give you another example for how the beginning of this episode is not actually a send up of anything. It's legit. Although I did feel like naming the guy with all the gold chains, Lil Pusher, had some nice, like, covert and overt racism to it, which I thought nicely set up, like, oh, these are bad people who made the commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. They said that they wanted to call him Lil Pusha instead of Pusher, but they couldn't, like, there's a rapper named Lil Pusha.
Well, there's Pusha T, so maybe that was too close.
Oh, maybe it's too close to that one. So, yeah, but it's, you know, it's a rapper and Tommy talking about how you should sell your gold. And they're standing actually in front of their vault that we see later. Not as full of gold when we see it. And then it goes right into meeting our victim, who's a woman who, to help pay her mortgage, she gave them her grandmother's ring or necklace. And then I guess they probably appraised it at a higher value. And then they sent her a check for only $125. So she's upset and she wants either more money for it because she knows it's worth more, or she wants her grandmother's necklace back. And Barbara comes over and handles it. And she's like, oh no, you know, it's probably gone. And she checks their inventory. And it clearly says on the screen that it's still in the building and it hasn't been sent off. She's like, oh nope, it's been melted down. And then just has security just boot this woman out on the street. And then she gets the necklace out of the, like, a safe box. And she's like, oh, grandma had good taste. And she just wears it.
Yeah, it's very, well, so it does show on the screen that it was appraised for more money. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, they gave her less than the gold was worth. And in doing some research for this article, for the episode, I found an article on the now defunct site Consumerist, which used to be Gawker's, like, consumer blog. I don't know. And they had published secrets of cash for gold from a former employee. And there's all this, like, legalese at the top about how Cash for Gold had reached out and said it was fake. And this is an employee who's out to get them. And, you know, all the takedown notices and stuff. It's kind of a trip. But that's one of the sales tactics that's in the article is used in this episode, which is the woman comes in and says, this check is only for $125. I want my money. You know, I want my piece back. And they're like, oh no, you only have 2 weeks to say you don't want the money, and you're past it by 3 days. And she says, oh, I just got this check yesterday. And apparently that's a thing that Cash for Gold allegedly does, is they will hold on to the letter that they send back for like a week so that by the time someone gets it, they're already past their return window. Because by law, they have to give you so many days to accept the amount back. So a lot of the stuff that they're doing in this is allegedly what these gold places do in real life.
So don't give them your gold, people.
No, if you have to sell gold and stuff, go to an actual pawn shop where they will weigh it in front of you and tell you what the price of gold is and then do the calculation right there and you can check the math.
Yeah. There you go. Woodbridge Gold would do that for you.
They would, probably. I've always wanted to go.
You should go when this is all over.
Yeah.
Report back.
Special episode.
Right. Okay, so I'm really excited because this episode takes us to a new place. That's not really a new place. But our victim shows up at McCrory's and she's, you know, telling Nate and Hardison is there, telling them all about what happened to her. And Hardison kind of interrupts Nate when he's talking to her. And, you know, he's like, oh, this happens to thousands of people, blah, blah, blah. They, you know, they get, you know, the people get checks for that are way less than the value of the piece that they gave them. And then he says, there's a pattern of perfidy. And Nate looks at him and is like, a pattern of perfidy?
Nate is horrified by this.
Yeah, he's like, what are the words coming out of your mouth right now? And, you know, Hardison kind of just takes the reins from Nate and tells this woman that he's like, we're gonna, you know, we're here for you. We're going to do everything we can to help you get your necklace back and probably get you a little something else to help with the mortgage too. Just very confident, very optimistic about what's going to go down.
Promising a lot of stuff.
Yes. And Nate is not quite sure what's going on. And she leaves and Nate's still like, pattern of perfidy? Really? But Hardison tells him, this is the one, Nate. I've looked into it. There's no international crime. There's no Russians with guns. There's no Interpol. It's low risk, low danger. This is it. This is my debut. Basically, I'm going to run this job. And then I love this exchanges. Nate says, oh, no. Hardison says, oh, yes. And then walks off and Nate says, oh, boy. And then that comes back later, and I think that's beautiful. But first, we talk about it all the time on this show, this podcast, that nobody ever appreciates Hardison and all the work that he does. And he'll like complain about it a little bit, but here he finally is like, no, putting my foot down, because he wants to run the con, and Nate is like, no, you're not up for it. You can't do it. And he gets upset. And Hardison's
very explicit about, like, you don't appreciate that I make the fake IDs and I make the cover stories and I spend weeks of work doing this. And I appreciated him explaining weeks of work because the show often makes it seem like the time from, like, client shows up at the bar to client leaves bar with money is sometimes, like, 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And I liked that this sort of makes explicit that this is something that there's a lot of work that goes into. We just don't show it to you because it's kind of boring.
Yeah. And even in the commentary, they were saying that we've never really known how the clients find Nate and McCrory's. And I can't remember if they were saying, like, in this episode, we're making it explicit, or if there was like another one that they had cut out stuff, but it's, you know, it becomes clear that Hardison is finding these people because he knows this background already before this woman comes in, and he's ready with that term pattern or perfidy. Like, he's finding these people out somewhere and then like leading them to Nate, you know, the way that he gave Hurley's phone number to Nate.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually in one episode or if I just read it on John Rogers' blog that like he's probably got social media scrubbers like looking for the right pattern.
Yeah.
And then targeted pop-up ads to people so that they'll like you find it and then come in.
In trouble? Yeah.
Just picture of old Nate appears on your screen.
Instead of an anonymous Guy Fawkes mask.
Yeah.
Like, it's old
you
Nate.
Have a follow request from old Nate.
But yeah, so like that really implies that Hardison has done, because, you know, we do see them in the same outfits, you know, they'll be downstairs talking to a client and then they come back, they come upstairs. And so that's clear that that is literally happening right after one another. But then knowing that Hardison has put all this prep work in before the client even steps foot in the bar is mind-boggling and never addressed by any of the others in the crew.
It makes it a lot more plausible that he has all of the, like, financial records and everything ready to go, always.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So. So now they're up. He's complaining that he wants to run the con.
And Nate's just, like, scoffing at him, sort of. And, you know, they're all like, oh, no, we do appreciate what you do. We just don't really understand it. But, you know, we're grateful, like, but not enough. Because then he's like, all right, go ahead. Nate's like, do your thing. Run it. And Hardison has had enough. And he's like, you know what? If you think it's easy, you can do it. And he crosses his arms. And Barker's like, that's his serious crossing arms.
Which is so cute, because, like, over and over, Parker has been sort of taught by Sophie and all of them about, like, paying attention to people and, like, you know, how to learn about stuff. And she learned about Hardison. And she's so supportive in this scene. Like, when Nate is coming at her, she's rolling her eyes at him. And
she even, like, later, when he tells her to do something, she looks at Hardison first and she's like, I'm sorry, he told me to do this, I gotta do this. But yeah, Hardison like walks over and he sits down and Nate is, you know, trying to hit things with the button and on the remote control, and then he has to like, Sophie has to like point out the
keyboard
to him.
Can't even get to the internet.
Yeah, he can't even, and he's like, then he's just Googling gold, whatever their thing is, gold to be sold.
And then somehow Portland restaurants.
Yeah, he's like, and Elliot's interesting here because he just looks, I mean, he always looks pissed, but I can't quite make out, like, is he angry? I guess he's angry at Hardison for, like, throwing this hissy fit, or...
It seems like he's irritated at the whole, like, the unprofessionalism of it, because yeah. I have a note that he doesn't actually speak up about any of the, like, back and forth until after he finds out that Hardison knew the vault would be empty and had them break in anyhow, which would be, like, putting the team in danger. And that's when Elliot's like,
line.
No, why did you do this? Like, that's, like, he'll let him... It's fine if the two other guys are, like, locking horns, but as soon as it puts a member of the team at risk, that's when Elliot's like, okay, now it's my place to step in. I thought it was kind of an interesting thing that... Well, I also think it's smart that if you're going to have... I mean, I realize it's kind of a gendered thing, but if you're going to have two of the men fighting to be, like, in charge, it's smart to keep Elliot out of it so it doesn't turn into, like, a three-way fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it totally makes sense that Elliot would be Switzerland. He'd be like, this is not important to me, so whatever. I'm just going to sit here until you work it out.
Of all of them, he's always been the one who's, clearest about his role on the team. And even into, like, season 5, it's, like, his role is his role, and he doesn't try to change it. Like, he's the one who protects the rest of them. That's what he does.
Yeah, and he's not insecure in that. He's like, I know what I do, and I'm good at it, and I'm satisfied. Yeah. I'm happy here, content. So, yeah, so he just sits there and doesn't really say anything, and things go wrong. Parker has to turn, he tells her to get to the commercial. Nate tells her to bring up the commercial. And that's when she looks over at Hardison. She's like, I'm sorry, I gotta do this. But then it, like, doesn't work. There's, like, static sound, and there's, like, a creepy picture of a tunnel, and then, like, a jump scare. And she kind of laughs, and Hardison's laughing, too. But yeah, Nate's like, fine, whatever. We're just going to do this the easy way. Let's go steal some gold. And then it switches over. They've gone on location, and now they're in Portland.
It's so convenient.
So, oh my gosh. And it really, like, 100% looks like Portland.
Yeah, they did a really good job, like, green screening everybody into Portland. Yeah.
Actually, they did use a green screen in the hotel because the hotel room is the same warehouse set that they used for the Hamptons in the last episode. They just repainted it, redid everything.
So is it a green screen outside the window?
It is a green screen outside the window. And they made it fake rain, even though you don't need to do that in Portland. But every time that they're outside, it's in Portland. And yeah. I don't know if it's because I know that they're in Portland or what, but it feels and because they don't have to hide things that would obviously not be Boston, but it feels like this episode just feels like a lot like, feels relieved in a way. Like, it's just like, okay, we don't have to like cut in tight here or like make sure we don't get the parking meters here that clearly say City of Portland or
there's a lot more outdoor scenes. Like, there are scenes that are on sidewalks that don't need to be.
Yeah. Like, there are like clear logos of restaurants that you know are not faked logos of restaurants. Like, when they go down in the tunnels later, Hobo's is like an actual, it's like a
well-known place. Very prominent Voodoo Donuts.
Yes.
Which I really hope was in exchange for donuts for the crew.
I mean, at least one dozen. and the coffee that she's drinking is Stumptown coffee.
So I didn't clock that. Okay.
I didn't either, but they mentioned it and I was like, there was no logo on that cup, but maybe they were just like, we were excited to drink Stumptown coffee on set.
They go to Portland because all they have to do is rob the vault. There's a vault. It's a Glenn Reader. It's easy to rob. It's a nothing vault. Parker's just going to go in. And so she breaks in through like a big window and goes and opens the vault. There's nothing inside.
But it's not even locked.
Yeah. She like turns turns the dial and just opens it.
And because of this point, Hardison is still not helping with the con, and they get back and he's like, oh, cause he's standing there watching everything go down. And Nate's like, why are you even here if you're not doing this con? And he goes, oh, I'm going to help Parker carry the gold. Gold's heavy. And then you're just like, oh, that's nice. And then you're like, there's no gold to carry. And also, he has this amazing three-piece suit situation happening in this episode. It's like gray, like the vest.
Yeah, but
purple.
Yeah, his first outfit when they're in Portland, he's got, the gray vest and a very small check of pink and blue, so it kind of gives it like a purple effect, but then his tie is made of the same material as the shirt.
Oh, I don't even remember the tie because it's the same material.
Yeah, no, it just like it took me, I didn't quite notice it, and then I was like, what's that line? Oh, he's wearing a tie that is exactly the same, like very kind of garish but beautiful shirt. Like, it's just, it's a lot of look, and if anyone can pull off a lot of look, it's Albus Hodge, but like I felt like the matching tie took him right up to the edge of like how far he could go before it turned into satire.
I think that's kind of a good thing for this episode, which also does the same thing for his character. Like, I think he's dressing the way that he expects he would or will when he one day runs this crew. Because I think he's very much wearing a costume, like, dress for the job you want.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because he doesn't really dress down.
he's not dressed down. Because, usually, he does look nice if he's, like, part of a con. But normally he's in, like, t-shirts and hoodies and things like that. And, like, or a cardigan or whatever. But this is, like, he's very dressed to the nines. And it turns out that he knew the whole time that there was not going to be any gold in this vault because they only, they melt it all down almost immediately and then send off the gold bars so that they don't have any there. And this is when Elliot gets so angry at him because they, you know, he knew it was empty and yet still put Parker at risk. And he's like, if you ever do this again, I'm going to personally make sure you're off the team by breaking every bone in your body.
And Hardison kind of takes that seriously. Like, he tries to laugh it off and is like, oh, no, okay, that maybe it was too far. Also, yeah. He does a voice command to unlock his computer. He says, like, Gladys Alpha, and that pulls it up, which is a Portal reference.
Yes.
I don't know if you've played Portal. It is a great game. But I don't know. I liked that he named, like, the thing to open his computer is the name of a killer computer. Felt right on par for him.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a little bit of foreshadowing for, you know. So, okay, one thing I wanted to say, he does get his comeuppance, and that's why he's like, okay, now I'm going to take control of this con. But as a Scorpio and as a petty person, I probably would have held out longer. I would have been like, nope, I'm going on vacation. You guys can do this whole thing without me. And they probably would have been fine, sadly.
I don't know. He wanted to prove something, I think, more than he wanted them to come back to him.
Yeah, that's true. And he knew exactly when would be the time that he'd come back in.
Yeah.
So he tells them that he's, you know, they're like, okay, you're gonna, we admit we needed you. So what con are we going to do? And Sophie, I love when they throw out these con names, the Lazy Dachshund, the Pizarro Pressure Point. And he's like, no, we're not going to do any of these like picturesque 18th century cons. This is going to be a brand new 21st century con, and it's going to blow their minds. It's going to go down in history of con artists. And then I just love that he has so many processes for Gladys to initiate. He's like 67 age, the double pronged monkey con.
Thank God.
Is the name of this con.
The whole time he's trying to explain everything, Sophie is so like proud of him and supportive and also very aware that this is not going to work and he has not come up with a new con. But like she is going to watch him try, like she's going to cheer him on.
She's like, oh, what's the like quote from the Fresh Prince where it's like, you know, he's a little confused but he's got the spirit.
No, she's very like good stage mom.
Mm-hmm.
Like she knows her kid isn't gonna be able to like his voice is gonna crack during the solo, but she's gonna be there and cheer him up.
Exactly. We learn by failing, and she knows that better than anybody. And Nate is being a grump and he's kind of like sitting in the back corner. He gets up at some point and like goes to sit at a table in the back. But Hardison tells them that this con is based on video game design fundamentals, which Parker's first video game is Pac-Man? Like Pac-Man? And he's like, yeah, sure. But any game really. And then, which I think is like fascinating. He's coming at it obviously from a gamer's point of view. And
well, this was also right when, like, gamification was a big thing.
Yeah.
That was, like, a big buzzword for a while there. It's like, if we just make it into a game, our employees won't even notice that they're working. So I feel like it was kind of a hot topic when they were, like, writing this episode.
Yeah. So he's going to turn our bad guys into players, player one and player two, and he's like done a deep dive on their psychological profiles. And he knows that Tommy is this like all perpetually single alpha male, hyper competitive kind of guy who's also not very bright, but his sister is very, very smart. She has like a degree in chemical engineering and she's like the brains behind their stuff. And that's how they're gonna hook them is by using video game techniques. So he's done so much. He's like put ads on his social media about treasure and all this stuff because he's gonna implant this idea of a reward in his subconscious. And to have him like primed to go on a treasure hunt. And it's all going to start with this gold watch with this Cantonese inscription inside. So Parker, in this adorable, like, little indie hipster, like, millennial, wonderful outfit.
The very, like, retro, the 50s retro look.
Yeah. But
super cute.
I love this dress and her little, like, thing in her hair and fascinator and everything.
Well, to be fair, that is, like, right in your style, Lane.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you have a touch of the rockabilly about you.
Oh my god, thank you so much.
I say to the girl wearing these striped cat eye glasses on the other side of his Zoom meeting.
I even have bangs now. I feel so much more they're rockabilly with bangs. So yeah, she takes in the pocket watch, and you know, she kind of drops that she runs an antique store and she got this at an estate sale, and gives him her business card so she can be easily found later. And he tells her it's only worth like $42 and he 46. Will not haggle with her.
He's like 46 and she's like 100. 46.
Oh, in the transcript it says 42. Interesting. But yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's 46.
I think you're right. It was 46.
But they just keep going back and forth because, and then she's like 47. He's like 46.
She's like, fine. And then he gives her cash right away instead of sending her a check, which is different than how it happened with the other woman.
Well, I think because it's in person. She didn't mail it in.
That's right. She did mail it in.
Yeah, because if you mail it in, they have to, like, they're basically, like, making you an offer. Or, like, this is the appraisal. Do you want to sell it? And if we don't hear back from you in 2 weeks, we assume that you're keeping the check.
That you're cashing the check. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And she takes her money and leaves just as Tommy's coming in, and the appraiser is like, hey boss, you might want to look at this watch. I think there's something to it. And he, you know, immediately takes it. And then we're introduced to Barbara via Hardison, who kind of goes into how she's completely opposite from her brother. She's got a degree in chemical engineering. And so she's all the technical and the financial parts of the business. And Nate's like, all right there. Like, she's not going to buy into this treasure hunt situation. Like, she's going to be too logical and she's going to turn, like, shut her brother down. And also she's going to be busy doing other things. And, you know, Hardison's like, well, that's what you might think. But even though she majored in chemical engineering, she minored in archaeology. So she'll already know a little bit about this piece that's coming in, and she'll know kind of the stories that he's going to link up to it. And he also makes it to where she doesn't have anything else going on at the moment, because they get a shipment of gold back that the guy says that the purity rating wasn't up to snuff. So they have to take it back for now. Oh man, I feel like we skipped what Nate wanted to do.
Oh yeah. Well, no, it's intercut.
Does that come in a little bit? Okay.
It's intercut here because at some point Nate jumps in.
Oh, yeah, like, that's when okay, he does.
So what you want to do is get, like, shut down the business, and then, like, if you can just shut it down for a couple days, and then we'll go in and get, and everyone turns and stares at him, and he's like, oh, right, I'm not the one running it. And then he starts, yes. Hardison goes back to explaining it, and then Nate just, like, ignores him and starts writing, and Hardison's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just writing a letter. Like, oh, okay, great. Well, while you're dealing with your snail mail over there, we're doing a 21st century cutting edge con. And, like, in the background, Nate is just, like, putting it in an envelope and writing and, like, stamping the envelope. Yeah. It's not like a letter that he's going to set aside. He's full on putting it in the mail.
He's ready now to put this in the mail, which, you know, we'll see later.
The purity rating's bad. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to keep the truck full of gold. And the worker's trying to talk to her when the brother comes in.
Yeah, and distracts her. He's like, this downtown antique dealer brought this in, and you think it might be actually worth something? And she looks at it, and she looks at the lettering, and she's like, I think it's Cantonese. So, and he calls her an egghead, because that's something that people call other people these days.
Maybe he was inspired by Parker's 1950s getup to use 1950s slang.
Maybe. So, you know, they decide he's going to track down the dealer and see if she's got any other pieces that go with it and see if there's anything to it. And Barb Barbara's like, well, I mean, I might as well come along because, like, there's nothing I can do here right now. And they have the afternoon off. So they can head off together.
I want to point out one other good bit of costuming that's happening here. Barbara's wearing lots of gold jewelry, like not just the necklace that she stole at the beginning, but she's also wearing like this big chunky gold necklace and multiple bracelets and a lot of rings. And look, there are people out there who can layer lots of different kinds of jewelry and it looks really interesting and intentional. Corey can do this.
Yes.
But that's not what's happening here. It's very clear that she just sees gold jewelry coming through and kind of basically steals it. Like it's not just this one necklace, but she's like a crow. Like she's wearing so much jewelry and none of it goes together. And each piece is beautiful on its own. And together it's a really bad look for her. And it kind of keeps up throughout the whole episode. And I thought it was just a really nice touch that they did, but didn't really like draw attention to.
Yeah, she also wears a lot of like gold coloring. She wears like a silk gold blouse. It felt very Sharpay Evans, if Sharpay Evans like sold gold and was like into that.
Yeah.
So it's right. Just like it's you know this that this is an like expensive look. This is an expensive look, but it is not like a good look. It's like, it's very nouveau riche, very, I have money, but I don't know how to tastefully spend it. Like, I'm going to be showy about it and in like a borderline tacky way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, they go and find Parker's warehouse. And I love, this is actually obviously a real, well, one, it's a real antique place in Portland somewhere. But I love imagining that they didn't shut this place down. Parker just met them at the door and is pretending to work there. And like, there are other employees walking around and she's just showing off pieces.
Maybe they have people. Maybe it's just, like Sophie in a hat distracting the real owner.
Yeah, and she's over here taking money for things because she shows them the other piece that she got at this estate sale, which she was going to varnish or whatever, but she lets them look at it, and it's an old chest, and she kind of walks off. And they find, peeking out from underneath the lining on the bottom of this, like a piece of paper that has like a code on it.
And like a big chunk of gold dust. It's very, so this paper is not well hidden. There's a big chunk of it sticking out from the felt lining, and it, I mean, I guess maybe you want it to be easy, you want them to notice it, but like it couldn't have been like taped to the bottom of a drawer or a false background. Like, under what circumstances would Parker not have noticed that?
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, it just felt like they should have had to like pull back the felt or something and see a paper or.
And I think that is intentional. I think we're supposed to go, like, I don't think it's just supposed to be, you know, us being nitpicky. I think it's supposed to be just the average viewer going, that seems a little too easy. Like, if you don't want them to catch on, it should be harder.
Okay.
I'll buy that. I do think that's intentional because of what happens later.
Yeah.
You know? So they're like, oh, this has something to do. And she also drops the information that, you know, Hardison's like, okay, now is when we drop the fact that this is related to the Snake River Massacre treasure. And so she's like, yeah, I got it in an estate sale. And the dead guy was like the son of some like really famous 19th century preacher. And they're like, you know, Barbara is immediately kind of intrigued, her ears go up, and that she's like, and apparently this guy knew the location of this local famous treasure, the snake something or other. And Barbara's like, oh, that's a huge piece of local history. And she goes in and she explains it because Parker doesn't know, and obviously Tommy doesn't know anything, but it's based on a real massacre that happened for the same reasons, outside of Portland, the Hell's Canyon Massacre, which happened in May 1887, when as many as 34 Chinese miners in Wallowa County, Oregon, were murdered by a 7-member gang of men and boys. They netted as much as $50,000 in gold, which is like $3.4 million in 2019. But then supposedly one of the gang members double-crossed his partners and fled with all of it.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
I know. It's like,
if you can't trust your fellow murderous outlaws, who can you trust?
People today. Yeah, so... And then, like, the kicker is that although three of the gang members, you know, of the seven gang members, three of them, were tried, but no one was ever convicted of the murders of 34 people. So, it's the American justice system for you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Uh-huh. Yes. So, you know, after she's planted this seed about the mystery, they find the cipher and they, you know, they're like, oh, we'll buy this. we'll pay you $50. And
Parker calls him cowboy.
She's like a bell. She's like, $50 it is, cowboy. She's just living for this piece that she's doing.
She's playing. She's really inhabiting this character. I feel like she's doing a better job at the con, and I think it's because of how much she loves Hardison.
Yeah.
She's going to go the extra effort.
I'm going to do it for him. And, you know, I think just Portland really agrees with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only they could stay longer.
God, if only they could stay in Portland. So Barbara is explaining how a cipher works to her brother, who is, again, very dumb. He's never read a Hardy Boy mystery. And... The kicker is, like, they have to figure out what book or famous text has been used to encode this cipher. So they have to find out more about the person who wrote it. So she straight up just Googles who's an expert on Samuel Cavendish. And she finds Sophie.
I did appreciate that the search at least was like kind of specific, because often on shows you'll have people go to a Google and type in like unsolved murder. And then the first link is the link to their, she appeared to at least do a little bit of like scrolling and clicking.
That's true.
I appreciate it. Otherwise that's why people think that like, I don't need a librarian. I just have Google. No, you don't.
No. Yeah. But she's obviously done some database research in her time studying chemical engineering. So she's a little better. They go back to the hotel room for Hardison to unveil his next exciting part of his con, which is that he's given everybody code names and he has little cartoons for all of them. Sophie is Silver, Nate is Mercury, which I think is great. Elliot is Mr. Punchy and Parker is Gold. And Elliot is not happy that he's Mr. Punchy until Hardison makes the icon like animated and it's like punchy, punchy, punchy noises.
And then Elliot breaks and is like, okay, that's pretty cool. And I like I think Elliot knows Hardison well enough to be like, oh, this is you're a dork. You want the dorky. A dorky animation and weird code name.
And he loves it. I mean, it reminded me of when he made the Japanese baseball commercial for him.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And he genuinely loved it.
It's like, you know, played again.
And he, like, dances to it. And then later in this episode, he shows Nate the cartoon again. And he's like, look, punchy, punchy, punchy. Like, he just genuinely thinks it's fun.
And he doesn't say it out loud, but Hardison's code name is like Hardaman or something.
Oh, is it on the screen?
You see it over on the side. Yeah.
That's funny. I really love that he did this because it makes total sense. My issue with it is that the art style for each of the characters is wildly different. It's like he obviously just like copy and pasted something from the internet. So like Sophie and Parker's, the style of theirs is like very different than everybody else's.
Well, it's a very complicated con that he's going. He had to economize his time somewhere.
He couldn't have commissioned someone to come up with these characters. Come on.
Etsy does exist. Yes, that would have been a thing.
So, I think this is also when he, you know, Hardison's, or Elliot's like, okay, all right, that's pretty good. And he's like, yeah, would you mind writing that on the eval form? It's in the back of your packet. I really just, you know, I want your honest feedback. Well, they look, Elliot, I think, looks over his shoulder at Nate, and then Parker's like, oh, Nate never wants feedback. And Sophie's so excited to fill out this evaluation.
And there's a part later on when she compliments him and Hardison's like, put that on the evaluation form, and she's so excited about it.
She has like right there.
Which I don't think anyone's ever been excited to fill out an evaluation form.
No. I think she's not had to fill out very many in her lifetime. So it's the novelty. Oh, this is when Nate is writing his letter.
Oh, sorry. Wrong with that.
Oh, I mean, it's still technically the same scene because he's still explaining it, and it's just interspersed with what they actually do later. Then we have Parker. This is when we have our donut cameo from Voodoo Donuts. They're sitting in Lucille. Did they drive from Boston, or is this a rented Lucille?
I mean, is it out of the question that Hardison has Lucille stashed all over the country?
No, truly not. But she's eating this amazing looking donut that has cereal all over it.
Yeah, if you don't know what Voodoo Donuts is, go ahead and give that a look. They do outrageous donuts.
They're so good.
There's one in Austin. There's one at Universal Studios in Orlando, like in the City Walk area, which it's not a good decision after a day of riding roller coasters to stop for a donut before you go back to your hotel. But I can't say I regret the decision to do that.
I very rarely regret decisions that have to do with donuts.
It's worth just Googling pictures of these donuts. They are spectacular. Apparently for a while they were selling donuts for when you were sick that had NyQuil cream inside, but then they got in trouble for selling pharmaceuticals.
You know, Hardison's like, okay, call. You have to do this next part. So she calls and gets the professor who's in the office that they want out by promising her that she's going to give a seminar on Asian American studies. And then Sophie moves in or Elliot moves in for her first. He like puts down some pictures to like make it look like this is really her office with her biracial family.
Yeah, she's photoshopped in very clearly next to like a man and two children.
That's great.
But I think it's to cover why she would be an Asian American studies professor when she's not Asian American.
I mean, I know in college, my Asian American or my Asian civ professor was a white guy married to an Asian woman. So I feel like that's a thing that happens. And Tommy and Barbara come in to meet with her. And as they are walking through the door or as they're approaching the door, they hear like an altercation inside. And Nate is fighting with Sophie about getting some information about some tunnels. And then he like starts to like shake her or choke her or something. And Tommy, you know, he's immediately on, oh, I must protect this woman. And he like runs in and like pushes him off of her. And, you know, they chase him out. And they're like, oh my gosh, what was happening? We're just walking by. And are you okay? And she tells him that Nate is an antiquities dealer who's like actually more of a thug and wanted some help with her from her for this like treasure hunt that he's on. And so, you know, Barbara and Tommy are like, oh, he knows, like we're on to something that's real because somebody else is looking for it. And, you know, they're like, we're here to ask you about that, actually. And then Elliot goes back to the van and he's all excited. He jumps in the back of the van and he opens up the box of donuts and he's going to go pick his out.
Then he discovers that Parker's taken a bite out of all of them. So she can decide which one she wants. And she says that with, like, Fruit Loops stuck to her face.
She's like, I'm gonna try more. I'm gonna try them all. I mean, fair.
Fair.
Okay, so they have Sophie read the inscription, which is from Luke chapter 10, verse 8. When you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is set before you, heal the sick who are there, which is from the King James edition of the Bible, which is what was used a lot by Cantonese immigrant miners, apparently. And she obviously has a copy of this on hand. So they, you know, they bring out the cipher and they're like, we think this is related to the Snake River Massacre and Samuel Cavendish. So they're getting ready to decode it. But she, Hardison is like in her ear and he's like, don't buy into it yet. Like, act a little reticent about it. And so she makes them kind of talk her into believing in it. And they use the Bible to decipher it. And she has Barbara read it once she's done figuring it all out, which I think really adds to Barbara buying into all of it as well, if she's the one reading it, not hearing it from Sophie. And they, it says, deposited in the tunnels below the city, in walls 2 feet deep, we have hidden our mining fortunes. And then Tommy, again, is the dummy and doesn't know that there are these Shanghai tunnels that run underneath Portland that were used to abduct or Shanghai sailors back in the 1800s, which are real. Like, those are actual tunnels below Portland that they actually did this. And they end like out on the waterfront, because they would just board, like, load them directly onto boats. And then once they woke up, they'd be on their way to Shanghai. But down there, and then there's even more description. It says, to arrive there, enter through the dockside doors, follow here through the southern tunnel, and come upon a left turn. And we see the crew getting the tunnel ready for them to come. They're like straight up spray painting arrows to like lead them places.
Yeah.
If they would have had spray paint in the 1800s. They're implanting...
just like lighting to try to subconsciously lead you the right direction.
Yeah, and fake rocks that are speakers and like motion sensors to set off things to help out later. And they're also putting up like more signs like keep out and like dangerous, things like that, to, you know, amp up that sense of danger. The Madsens show up, and the entrance to this tunnel is just on a sidewalk. It's just like,
it's like a sewer.
It's a sewer. Just like these big metal flaps that come out of the ground, and they just go right down. And they just open them up and go. They don't have anybody's permission. And they're walking around, and she's in like white pants and like her little purse over her shoulder. And I don't even, are they even wearing, they're not even wearing hard hats or any other gear.
No, they're just like out for a little stroll through the sewer.
You know, these are like really old tunnels.
Yeah, where people used to get like kidnapped. Just no big.
Yeah.
No reason why you might need to run.
But while they're down there, they finally find where the treasure is, and they like turn left and they open this door, like, and there's a door. Oh my gosh, this is behind this door that's obviously new and has new signs on it. That's where the treasure is going to be. But they go in, and Nate and Elliot are in there. Nate, oh, when they're still getting things ready though, Parker asks Hardison, like, oh, what's my name again? Is it Apple? Apples? And Hardison's like, gold, it's gold. And she's like, Apple Axe. Which, that part was completely ad-libbed between Beth and Aldous, because he had so much dialogue to memorize. She asked him what her name was, and he had forgotten what it was. And so she was just, like, saying things, and then he remembered, and he was like, no, gold, gold. And so she's just,
that's so cute.
And they just left that in. I love that. But yeah, so the Madsens walk into the room. They see Nate, who they know from before, and, you know, Elliot, who's his contractor. No, he's not a contractor. He's a...
Wait, you talk about the really cute part where Hardison explains to Elliot what his character is. And Elliot's like, that's not how I'm going to play. And he's like, okay, so here, your character, he's a surly guy. He knows he could do more with his life. And Elliot's like, I'm not going to play him like that. And Hardison's like, that's fine. That's fine. I encourage innovation, unlike some people. And Nate's like, yeah, how am I going to play a cold, calculating boss? But I like that Hardison is actually a good coach to everyone. Like, they all give really good performances.
Yeah.
His con doesn't work because he overcomplicates it, but he's got some skills.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got some skills that Nate doesn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way that Elliot does play it is very like Oklahoma boy with his accent. Mm-hmm. And he also like repeats what Nate says several times, which I'm like, oh, I know people who do that. Like, that's a very like, he's obviously making this off a person.
Well, and I know he's not challenging, like, he doesn't challenge the brother at all. He's very, like, meek about it. So he is playing not himself exactly, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I like, though, that Hardison is like, okay, whatever, you know, you can do it. I have faith.
They come in, and Nate and Elliot are arguing about bringing the... So they're like, okay, we have this cipher and we know that it's going to be over here on this south facing wall. And Elliot's like, in these walls? No, that's the sub foundation of these buildings. That concrete's like 2 feet deep. And if you want to get through that, you're going to need this special drill, which you can't get that. And Elliot's like, 560 drill. You need that. Which is apparently very expensive and very highly regulated in Portland or in Oregon. And Nate's like, that's why you need me, because I have my engineer here and he's got access to one of these drills. And he's like, yeah, I can get one.
And it's like $36,000 or something.
Yeah. And Nate's like, well, I have the access to it, but I don't have the cash for it. So if you want to give me like 34G, we can get that for you. And we'll go 50-50 on the treasure. And Barb is like, She's like, okay, give us your card and we'll think about it. So they get out and, you know, head off. And Hardison's like, are you blown away yet, Nate? Are you super impressed with me? Please tell me I'm good. Please tell me you love me. That's all I want is your approval, Dad. And they're walking down the street and... You know, Nate's like, you know, it's a good plan. I'll give you that. But then he talks about, he's like, it's a good plan, but now I'm going to be a Debbie Downer about it. Because he's like, if you succeed at this, success only teaches you that the next time it has to be a little tougher. And being tougher means more risk and more danger and more pressure on yourself.
Is that this or is it next? Is it? The next time they have a chance. No, I guess that they have two. Like they have a couple of heart to hearts.
They do. They have heart to heart walk and talks between them. And he says, you know, the pressure of that begins to take a toll, and then you just start seeing the absolute worst in people, like all their sins and their weaknesses, and how you can take advantage of it. And like then you realize that the job has changed you, and it's like he's warning Hardison. Like, you don't want to do this. Like, you don't want to be what I am. And then you don't even see Hardison really react to that, because then it switches back to the hotel room. Because, I mean, how do you react to that?
Yeah.
So this is the really cute scene with Hardison and Sophie. And they don't have a lot of scenes that are just the two of them, which in the commentary they were saying, this is a shame because they have really good chemistry. They like really go off of each other really well. And they said also this, the way that they interact here is very much like a director and an actor talking to each other and reacting to each other. And I really like Hardison's like, okay, so the Madsens are inbound with their 34G. And then he wants Sophie to give him a high five. And she's like, oh, no, I don't do those. I don't high five. And she's like, but well done. And he goes, oh, thanks. Would you mind putting that on the evaluation form? She's like, oh, yes. And I love that it's right in front of her. She's ready to talk. Oh, and this is when Elliot shows Nate his little animation again. He's like showing him the phone. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. And it's like, punch, punch, punch. So, Nate, you know, asks Parker if she's good and like we're getting ready. And
I feel like there's a lot of cutting back and forth here.
There is. And then Hardison says something like, you know what? To tell you the truth, I had no idea. And Elliot says, about what? And Hardison says, oh, you know, when things come together so smoothly, when it all just clicks according to your beautiful and complicated plan, just how sorry you feel for them. And Nate's like, for them? No, we don't feel sorry for them. That's not what we do. And then Hardison's like, oh, you're just jealous of the puppet master.
Ugh.
And he like wiggles his hands. And Sophie's like, that's not, what are you doing? That's not puppet master. That's jazz hands.
And she says, oh, this is puppet masters. And she does like a Y shape upside down and like waggles her fingers.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that's hang loose. And she goes, no, this is hang loose. I feel like Sophie would know every hand gesture for every, like, culture and subculture.
Yeah. That's,
she would just know them.
Yeah, like, but he's like, oh, you know hang loose, but you don't high five.
Well, but a character of Sophie's would high five.
Yes, I know.
But the character of Sophie does not
right
high five. Because I feel like you could, there's a world where she goes and is, like, has to play a surfer girl in California. And has to throw a couple of, like, hang looses. Like, hang ten, hang loose, all the things.
That would be amazing. So Tommy shows up, and he has a check to give to Nate. But it's not made out to him. It's made out to the mining equipment company. And Tommy's like, yep, our new terms are 70-30. And they've decided that they're buying this drill. And... so they're doing all the heavy lifting, so they deserve a bigger cut. And Tommy's like, we're doing this because my sister's not a good negotiator. We're going to do this. And
Nate is very worried at this point.
Yeah, and Hardison's like, oh, well, those are valid points. Like, sure, they can have 70-30, you know.
Just take the money, Nate. Take the money.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm trying to. And Tommy's like, what? So we got to be a little bit better at this. Come on, guys. So, you know, Tommy's like, all right, call us when you're ready to hit the tunnels. And he walks off. So then they're down in the tunnel and Nate has his drill. And he's like, it's just going to take me a couple minutes. I'm going 3 feet into that wall and y'all should wait outside the door. But they don't want to because they're like, oh, you'll just run off with the money. But Elliot, you know, is like, I don't feel like he like, he's just very capitulating. He's like, oh, no, like, he's right. Like, it's not safe. Like, we put up these closed circuit cameras so we can watch everything on this tablet, and we can just go right out here and we can watch them the whole time. We've got CCTVs, that is closed circuit, isn't it? Yes. And so they go outside, and he starts working and they're like all excited. He drills through, then he pulls back the drill and you see like a little bit of sparkle. And then he like reaches in and he shows it to the cameras and it's gold. And they're like, it's gold. But then water starts coming out of the hole that he drilled in the wall. And then rocks fall down and we don't see anything else on the cameras. And then water starts gushing out from behind,
like hitting the door behind it, like someone pounding. Yeah,
lots of loud noises, and there's like water coming out from under the.
And it's like gross, nasty water.
Yeah, and there's like all this noise, and you very clearly see one of their rock speakers they left on a barrel. So you're like, oh, that's where that's coming from. And Elliot's like, we got to get out of here. So they go running out, and they get up, you know, up top, because it's going to collapse if they don't get out. And
yeah, they just hop right back out onto the sidewalk.
Yeah, and nothing else appears to be happening. They're just kind of standing on the street. And Sophie, you know, is back at the hotel room. She's like, how did you do that? And then we get we get a flashback. And instead of going to, like, Costco, Hardison just gets room service, and it's a lot of apple juice.
Which is very, has to be suspicious, right? If someone calls down and it's like, I want to order 60 bottles of apple juice, they might be like, no.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what you want with those, but it seems like a weird sex thing.
Uh-huh.
Please don't do that in our hotel. I also don't know why he used apple juice and not water. Like, it would look different, I guess, but wouldn't it smell like juice?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Unless, like, because he puts the juice into a pressure sprayer. That looks kind of like a...
it's like a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, like a fire extinguisher. So I think that's what comes gushing out of the wall. But then I think, because then we see Nate with a bucket and he throws water on the ground and that's the water that comes out. So I think maybe that's water, because I agree, while not a very pungent smell, apple juice is pretty distinctive.
It just doesn't seem cost effective, because each one of those bottles at a hotel, that's got to cost what? What's like the banana cost, Michael? $7?
Exactly.
So you have like $500 worth of apple juice wasted.
I mean, they are very rich.
I guess. It just seemed, it. I bumped on that.
Yeah, no, I thought that was weird. But I think it has to do with like, well, but he does leave. The idea that Hardison is orchestrating this without having left this hotel room. But he does leave.
His hotel room has a shower.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Maybe you can't just put water in a fire extinguisher and have it work. Maybe it has to be apple juice. Maybe it ferments a little and then it's more spray.
Maybe the sugar does something. The sucrose interacts with the something something.
Yeah.
Okay, that's...
Or they were just like, what would be the most funny thing to be delivered to room service that we could use in the scene? And then we see that... it's Nate banging on the door with a large hammer, and then he pours this bucket of water at the base of the door. And that's how we fake this. And Hardison triggered this, the rock fall. And it's just a couple styrofoam rocks, basically.
It reminded me of the tricks that, like, they use at Disneyland for rides, where, like, things shake, and it feels like it's all about to fall apart, but it doesn't actually, like...
Yeah. Oh, man. I want to ride on a Hardison... roller coaster or ride experience that he comes up with.
Oh, cool. Man, in the reboot I would totally watch it, like Let's Go Steal a Theme Park.
Yes.
And like Hardison keeps getting distracted.
Yeah,
but I like the idea of Hardison getting distracted from the con because he's like creating better and better rides,
right? He's an Imagineer.
Yeah. And Parker gets very ill because she also eats like way too much stuff right before she gets on the roller coasters.
Oh, Elliot has to play a character.
Mm-hmm. And not punch anyone.
And not, yeah, and like be nice and fun. And
somehow Sophie ends up on one of the floats playing a princess.
Oh, yes.
They're like, how did she?
Thank you for being here today. Yes, that would be amazing. That would be quite the budget because they wouldn't be able to do Disney, so they'd have to have some knockoff.
I don't think New Orleans is known for its theme parks.
No, it's not. Okay. So the Madsens are freaking out up on the road, and Elliot is freaking out too, because he's like, I'm out of here. That's it. The deal's off. And actually, they're not really freaking out. They're just like, what? Why? And he's like, because Lenny Granzen is dead down there. It's a crime scene. That's why. And they're like, well, he knew the risks, and that was on him. So that we've got to, there's got to be
another way. Real blasé about causing the death of a man.
100%, like, immediately right after, they're like, oh, well, he knew. He accepted those risks.
Yeah. Like, they were bad people before this. I don't think they were quite that bad.
Or maybe they were.
Well, no, I mean, like, the episode had set them up to be, like...
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is us, like, discovering, oh, they've done this before. How did they get their gold company anyways?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're like, there's got to be another way that we can get through the floor of this sub basement. And Elliot's like, and risk the landlord finding out. Because if he finds out, guess who gets all the gold in that scenario? Him, because it's on his property. The only way that you can get this gold is if you own this whole block or this whole, you know, storefront area. And they're like, well, they're like, you know, just help us out. Cause he's like, you got to get the mineral rights. You got to get everything. And they're like, well, how can we do that? And he's like, well, I just so happen to know the owner. And I know that he's been trying to sell for a couple of years. And I know exactly how much he wants for it off the top of my head too. He wants 4.2 million, but I don't have that kind of money. I'm on city salary here. And they're playing it like he keeps trying to walk away from them, which is like making them want to bring him back more. And I think that's how they're kind of explaining that they just are believing everything he says, you know, without question. And so they're like, okay, if you can get your buddy to sell it to us at 4 million, because they like look at each other and they're like, should we do it? Like, let's just do it. Like, come on, what's $4 million? Let's go. You know, if they can get it for 4 million, they'll cut him in for 10% of the treasure. And he's like, all right. And then Sophie is still sitting with Artisan. And she's like, wait, wait, let me get this straight. All of this, the watch, the chest, the cipher, the Cantonese Bible, all of it, it's just for a land deal. And he's like, and the cave-in. And he's like, well, it's a fake cave-in.
But he's very proud. He's like, yeah, it's for a land deal.
Yeah. She's like, is this a staged tragic death for a land deal? And he's like, yeah, impressive, right? She's like, Hardison, I once got a land deal with a glass of champagne and a low-cut dress. We did not need to go to these lengths.
And you can, like, see the disappointment on her face that this is where it's been leading to. Like, yeah. She was on board. She thought something amazing was going to happen. And she's like, it's this? Like, oh, no.
It's very Tyra Banks. We were all rooting for you.
Yeah.
She's like, you don't need all of this. You just need an attorney. And he's like, oh, well, I was going to be the attorney. Because everybody else is, you know,
they're burned.
Yeah. So they got to hurry up. Because the Madsons called like almost immediately and they want to push the closing till tomorrow, up to tomorrow.
Hardison like freaks out when he finds out it's got to be tomorrow.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not ready. I don't have an office. I don't have a Swiss bank account set up. I am just not ready for this. And Nate, you know, comes out of the tunnel and he's like, you got to find one because you got to get an office and clear it out because this is happening. And Elliot's a little annoyed. He's like, I'm getting sick of this. This is amateur hour, which is not nice. So Nate's like, you're the puppet master. Pull your strings. And Sophie goes, jazz hands.
Well, then they just kind of skip to the attorney's office. They don't really explain, like, how do they get him to get them to go to that attorney? Like,
yeah, and I mean, he had to have, like, pulled up all the paperwork. Unless it's fake paper. I don't even know.
He logged on to his local library.
Yeah.
And went to their forms.
And he was like, how do I get the mineral rights for this real estate? Because that takes a long time.
Well, but he goes in. So there's some guy in an office in, like, a larger building. It's not a standalone office who's complaining about, like, his computer virus and where's IT. And then Hardison just, like, appears in the door. It's like, hello, I am IT.
And he's like, you are very sharply dressed for IT. And he was like, age of the geek, baby. Because he's still in his lovely suit. And as the guy, like, sits down on his couch in his office and he's like, oh, you can go get lunch. And he's like, nope, too much work. And he's like, dude, I'm going to have to go through every single website that you've ever gone to on this computer. Are you sure you want to do that? You sure you want to be here for that? And he's like, oh, yeah, I will go take lunch. Because,
yeah, but also, that's really poor security from that guy. Like, dude you've never seen before shows up and you just leave him alone in your office. Like, lock your filing cabinet or something.
right?
You're an attorney. You have private files.
Yeah. Well, he's already giving him access to all of the files on his computer, so.
Yeah.
You know, basically he's screwed if Partisan was there for that. So he leaves, and almost right after he leaves, you know, he gets everything set up, and the Madsens show up, and he has the forms, and he's like, okay, let's fill these out, like, just sign it on these flagged parts. And they immediately start kind of questioning it. They're like, you know, I've had this nagging feeling all morning, and I just, like, have we made this, has this gotten too complicated? And, you know, they just start talking themselves out of it. They're like, you know, we're gold people. And, you know, and then, Hardison's like, no, just sign.
Yeah, he gets sort of increasingly desperate about, like, yeah. It's such a great deal. You should just, I spent a lot of time on these papers.
And Tommy's like, you look familiar. Have I seen you before? And he's like, no. Portland's a small town. And, which is always the wrong thing to say.
No. It also seemed, had they seen Hardison before? Like,
no.
I don't know when they would have, unless it was just him, like, hanging around, but.
Yeah. No. And they thought about doing a flashback where Tommy, like, remembers, like, walking by him or, like, seeing him in context with Parker or something, but they don't.
That's where they should have had Hardison talking to the antique store owner to, like, distract her.
Oh, that would have been good. Yeah. But no, they just start putting it together. Like, this guy's being really pushy. It all happens so easily. You know, we got the antique dealer. I happen to have the afternoon off. You know, all this stuff just fell into place just so. And, you know, just when we would get, you know, there would be like obstacles that would drop in our lap, but then before I got too frustrated, they would go away.
They basically just like crack the whole con.
You just
like
wide
they see
open.
All the steps.
And then an office worker pokes her head in and she's like, oh, where's Mr. blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, this guy's a con man. He's like, no, I work here. And then he like makes a break for it. And, you know, he gets out and then, like, runs. And then he gets to this, like, old-fashioned elevator. And he jumps in it, and Nate's there, and they go down this elevator.
Yeah, he, like, pulls the grate shut, right, as the brother's coming after them.
Yeah, and he's, you know, Tommy's yelling at them. And then we get the reversal of Nate and Hardison from earlier, because Hardison says, oh, no, and Nate says, oh, yes, and Hardison says, oh, boy, as they go down on the elevator. And then we get them walking. I did look up the bridge. It's called Steel Bridge, and it's a really cool, it's one of those bridges that were, like, so that ships can pass underneath it instead of, like, opening up in half at an angle. It's, like, the middle of it just, like, lifts up on these high girders.
Ugh. Yeah. I'm not a big bridge person. They kind of, they wig me out pretty badly.
Yes. Okay, so they're on the bridge, and Hardison, you know, is kind of beating himself up. He's like, I don't know what happened. I just, and then Nate drops some gaming lingo. He's like, you didn't anticipate the rage quit. You know?
And Hardison is floored that he knows the term rage quit.
You know gamer technology, and he's like, no, but I know, or obviously, yes, but I know that the key to a good game is balancing that that boredom and frustration. And if you don't get it right, if the puzzle's too easy, then you get bored. But if the puzzle's too hard, then you just want to quit. And Hardison's like, how do you know that? And he's like, I know a few things. I've been doing this for a while. And I know that an overcomplicated puzzle begs the question, is it really worth it? Like, it's got to be simple. If you can't, like a good lie, you know, can't have too many details.
Right? Yeah.
But he's like, but not all is lost, you know? And Harrison's like, how? how is it not all lost? I've ruined everything. And he's like, well, all of this was just to distract them from the heist. And Hardison's like, what? So then we get the Madsons showing back up at their warehouse. And they're like immediately yelling for their guy, Roy, to call the police. And my thought when they do that is like, well, you have a phone. Why don't you call the police? Why does Roy have to call the police?
Maybe they don't have a phone.
Okay. Maybe. But they maybe have a they report. And they're like, oh, and they're still putting it together. Like, and that professor, don't forget the professor. And Roy's like, did something happen? And they're like, never mind, we'll call. And so Roy's like, oh, good. I'm glad you're here, because they lifted the quality rating so they can take the shipments back of the gold tomorrow. And Barbara's like, great, great. Wait, what? Because she's forgotten what happened with the gold. And he's like, remember they sent all that gold back? I told you. And then we get a flashback to just when Roy is asking her what she wants him to do with the gold that's been shipped back. She gets distracted by Tommy. And he's like, well, I guess I'll just put it in the vaults.
I thought that flashback was really good, because not only like did she forget about that happening, I feel like the viewer has kind of forgotten at that point that like this even happened at the beginning.
Yes.
And it's not something that happened off screen, but it's like that's where the flashback, like, oh, reminding you of something, and you're like, oh yeah, like that happened, that's cool.
Yeah, I think that they did a really, really good job of that. And so, you know, she's like, you put the gold in the vault. And they're like, no, 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 this vault is basically useless. Like, it is, you know,
it's just for show. We don't even lock it.
Yeah. So they go in, or they open it up, and it's the gold is gone. There's a giant hole in the bottom.
Yeah, how would you make a giant hole in the bottom of a vault?
I don't know. My first thought, the first time I saw it, was like, well, they don't need to put a hole in it. They could just open the door.
It is a similar thought.
But
the hole is important.
Yeah. And while she's kind of like agog looking at that, she like puts her hand to her like collarbone. Like she's, and then she goes, oh, where did that go? And you realize that she'd been wearing the necklace, the client's grandmother's necklace, but it's gone now. She's like, what happened to that? And we also see that the client saying, like, how did you find the necklace, you know, my grandma's necklace? And they say that we sent our best retrieval specialist to get it. One of our best retrieval specialists to get it, because Elliot's also a retrieval specialist. And we see when they were at the antiques warehouse, when they go to look at the chest, that's when Parker lifts the necklace off of her.
It did seem weird, though, that like they're assuming that in the, what, 2 or 3 days, 2 days that have happened, that she wouldn't notice the necklace is gone.
Yeah.
Like, is she sleeping in all of that gold jewelry? Maybe, but like.
Yeah. But she, I don't know. She looked in a mirror at some point.
Yeah, it seemed weird that they didn't do the thing where you realize that, like, the dark-haired woman who walked by was Parker in a wig or something.
Yeah. Okay, so this is how I am making myself understand it. Because there are days, like, where I won't wear something that I normally wear. And I might go several days before it occurs to me, but like doing something, like emotion will make me remember. And even though I know I didn't put it on that day, like I touch my collarbone and be like, oh yeah, I didn't put that on today. When was the last time I put that on? Where did I put that? And then it's kind of like, where did that go?
I'll allow it.
No, I think that's what it is. And you know, they tell her that they also got the customer list of the gold to be sold. So they're going to send restitution checks to all the other victims from a special fund that they've established in her grandma's name, which is really sweet. And she's, you know, she's really thankful and like, I can't thank you enough. You know, ever since I lost my job, like nothing's gone my way. And this is the first time that I feel different. And, you know, Hardison's like, well, speaking of losing jobs, the Madsons are about to lose theirs. And we see the police show up and they're like, oh yeah, did you find out who stole our gold? And they're like, well, about that, your insurance company contacted us. And they're not really buying the story that someone broke into your vaults. You know, since you just bought a very highly regulated drill that you could use to rob your useless vault. And they're like, that's going to be the worst insurance scam ever. And then like leads them off to cuffs them, puts them in their car to drive away with. And the whole time they're like arguing with each other, like a brother and sister would do, which is great.
Yeah, she keeps protesting, like, it was con men, it was con men. And they're like, I don't know. No, no.
Yeah. So good. And then they're back in Leverage HQ, and Hardison is handwriting checks out to all of the victims for their restitution money, which is wild to me that he's doing this manually.
Maybe it's, like, kind of like paying penance.
Maybe.
Like, he's feeling raw about how it ended, so he's, like, a little, you know, not sulking, but, like...
Yeah. Like, okay, I like that. Like, he feels...
He's being, like, a gothic hero about it. He's like, I will accept my punishment.
Yeah. So then Elliot comes up, and he's like, how many restitution checks are you writing? And he says, 200. I've got about 100 more to go. And... you know, Elliot has an envelope and he's like, you got mail. And then he says, I'm out. I wish here that Elliot had offered to help. And Hardison being like, no, I got to do this myself.
Or if Elliot had even been like, well, let me take some, I'll go mail these ones or something.
Yeah.
The ones that he's
like, I'm out. And earlier he had said something about like, you know, some of us have social lives. And I was like,
Elliot. This was a very, very light Elliot episode.
Yes.
Which I wonder if there was... Because I feel like the one before this was relatively light, too.
But he had a lot of character beats in the last one.
Yeah, I just feel like he didn't have that much screen time. So I wonder if maybe there was something, you know, like if Christian Kane had a couple of days he needed to do something.
Maybe.
Like, not like a full, oh, I've got to go film another movie or something, but just like, hey, it's my mom's birthday and I'd really like to go spend the day with her. Can I have a day off filming?
Maybe. But the envelope that Elliot gives him is from Nate, and he opens it up and it just says, A, choke off the distribution, B, buy a drill, C, break into the vault. And this is obviously the letter that Nate wrote back at the hotel room in Portland. And Hardison's like, how could you possibly know? And, you know, Nate was like, I knew you had a complicated con in the works. And I knew if we had these three things and she was distracted from all the gold that we had a shot of taking over the family business. And he's like, you know, he kind of tells him like, you can never count on the perfect plan. You have to like come up with the dirtiest, simplest plan that will work. And that's like your plan M or your plan G. And that's what you start with. Quick and simple, ugly. And then you can pretty it up a little bit, but never expect that everything's going to go right. And always be ready for it to go wrong. Which also harkens back to the first episode when they, you know.
When Hardison dies in plan H or something.
Yes. Like F through H and M, you know? And he's like, but you know what? You should be proud. And he's like, proud? Like my whole plan fell apart. And he's like, yeah, it was smart though. It was a clever plan. Don't sell yourself short. And he goes back to writing the checks and Nate fills out, you see him filling something out
And he goes over and he filled out the evaluation form. And he's like, good night, Hardison. And he says, thank you. Which is really sweet. Oh, we skipped over the fact that when it all kind of goes pear-shaped, they're like, there are only, three different cons?
Seven
cons, and everything else is a variation. Which I think is an important thing.
But it did seem weird that the episode just kind of ends. It's he's like, thank you, man, and then the episode's over, and there's no, like, stinger or, like, there's no bit with Latimer or anything.
Yeah, I guess they had that last time, and so they didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seemed like more of an abrupt ending, though, than normal. Still sweet, though.
Yeah. Okay, let's do quick update, anything that we know about the reboot, and then do heist lights really, really fast.
Yeah. What do you have for Let's Go Steal a Reboot?
Let's Go Steal a Reboot. I think the most that I've seen is that they have done a read-through. So they're all in New Orleans now, and Beth Riesgraf posted a picture of them sitting at laptops, like at tables. That's kind of like an L of tables, and they all have like face shields on. And there's like, they each have like a bottle of Clorox wipes at each station and like water bottles. And I'm just like,
Well, and it looks like you can see they all have laptops, and it looks like all the crew is on Zoom.
Yeah.
Or whatever, or WebEx or something. Yeah. So it's only the actors in the,
The room.
And I don't think Noah Wiley's in that shot.
They didn't show him. No.
So it's not clear if he's like down there yet.
Yeah. And I don't follow him on any social media, if he has any.
I don't, but I follow some leverage Tumblrs, and I feel like they would have posted something. That's where I'm seeing all the...
Yeah, I know that they went... I know Christian Kane went golfing with some people in Louisiana, and there were some, like, alligators on the green.
I mean, that feels right.
Right? And I think that... Yeah. Oh, we did find... that the Kane's Kitchen was a little series that Christian Kane did with cooking. So
yeah, I haven't watched them yet, but I have strong plans too.
Yes. So you're going to report back to tell me if I should buy it. I thought maybe that this episode, I love that we talked about this episode because we do talk about video games, and I just started playing Dragon Age again. So like the idea of like this episode really hinging on like video game theory and fundamentals, I thought was very All right, do you have a heist light?
I do. So I was looking up gold scams, but those are very depressing. And so then I ended up looking up treasure. So it's less of a heist light and more of like a treasure light.
Mm-hmm.
There's a list of 5 legendary missing treasures in Oregon that you might not know about, which I got to this because I was like, wait, isn't the Goonies set
in
Oregon or like the Pacific Northwest? And of course that has the classic treasure. So there are 5 other ones. There's the Lost Cabin gold mine, the Blue Bucket mine, the Spanish pirate gold of Neocani Mountain. Although they think that one may have been found because there was a guy who famously went looking for the treasure and then he just stopped talking about it and had a bunch of money. So they think maybe he found it. The missing kettle of gold at Old Fort Grant, and Horse Thief Meadows, and the missing 25,000, which definitely sounds like some sort of, you know, Bobbsey twin mystery or something.
Yeah.
And then from there, I went and looked at the Lost Dutchman mine in the Superstition Mountains, which is in Arizona, and was like a thing that I heard about growing up, that like, oh, there's, you know, a famous lost mine and people have died going up into the mountains to look for it because those mountains are not nice mountains. Like they're very dangerous and there's lots of warnings about not going there. But there are some guys who claim to have found the mine and have a blog that they're very slowly like revealing little secrets about it. And it's just like 5 bros who have, they update it pretty sporadically. I think the last update was from like March of this year. But it is still sort of in progress, and they claim that they're going to like reveal proof, you know, I don't know. It's a fun, a fun website to like check every once in a while to be like, oh yeah, what is happening with that? And I'd actually seen the blog last year and then forgotten about it. So then I came across it again and I was like, oh yeah, these guys. Because I don't know, that's a really cool thing. And if you would like book fictional books about buried treasure, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child write books together, and they have one called Riptide, which is based on like the pit full of money in Nova Scotia.
Yes, that's what I was going to bring that up. Oak Island.
Okay. Yes, Oak Island. So they have a fictionalized version of Oak Island called Riptide, which is great. Although the ending is a little meh, but or just weird, but it's good. And they also have one called, I want to say Thunderhead, is it? Which is where they're trying to find like the lost Aztec City of Gold, Anasazi City of Gold. And I can't remember which tribe it is. Someone's City of Gold. They think they found it. They write like techno thrillers. They're very good. All right. Well, you should definitely read, if you're into Oak Island though, you should read Riptide if you like find yourself reading a book.
Yeah. So I won't go into it too much because there's a lot to find, but I have a link and everything. So in the commentary, because I hadn't heard about this, but in the commentary, they were saying that they're really based a lot of their treasure for the Snake River Massacre, that treasure hunt on Oak Island, which John Rogers was really obsessed with when he was a kid. And, you know, it's in Canada. It's on Nova Scotia. It's an island off Nova Scotia. And it's like never been solved. And I love, so there's a website called oakislandmoneypit.com. And just the first paragraph is amazing. It says, if someone were to claim they knew a story that involves the Holy Grail, a band of pirates, William Shakespeare, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Edgar Allan Poe, you might think the tale was a riddle or a fanciful movie script. However, one particular site in Canada holds a history that brings together all of these elements and more. So, yeah, I haven't actually looked into it too much, but there's a whole show on the History Channel of these brothers, because the island like is privately owned, so I think like treasure hunters will buy the island hoping that they will find this treasure. But apparently, like every time they'll like dig, there's like another booby trap.
Yeah, I know there's some question of like, is it actual booby traps or is it just like the way that the island works? Because they'll like try and dig out and then it floods again. And I know at one point someone built like a retaining wall around the whole island and tried to like drain the ocean from it. It doesn't seem great. But then also they're like, oh, we found proof of this floor. Like maybe, or maybe you just found some rocks. Like,
yeah. And I Googled like Oak Island treasure. And like one of the first things was like, have they found the Oak Island treasure? And some people are like, yes, they found this ruby brooch or something. I'm like, well, I don't think that's really what they were going for, but it's something.
Yeah. Well, even the whole thing about like pirates burying treasure is not like,
didn't really happen.
Really backed up by like, why would a pirate bury treasure? They're going to come back and spend it.
Yeah. Like, why would they bury it? Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know, but I feel like anything that's like cool shipwrecks stuff is always a fun read.
Mm-hmm. So, I do love a shipwreck. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for talking about two episodes
thank
in a row.
Thank you for having me. This was fun. Yeah, I don't think I'm back until, well, you're almost to the end of this season. You only got two more. Oh, that was the last thing I thought. Sorry, I had one last thought on the episode, that I really liked that they ended with Nate being a really good dad at Hardison, like a really nice, I don't even know if it was like a father-son moment, but like a really nice mentorship moment. And that was like honest and very sweet. And I thought that that's a good place to set up for the next episode.
Mm.
Like that was, it kind of brought it back around to like fathers and sons without being super overt about it.
Yes, I think that's a really good point.
So it's a nice tee up for next week's The Radio Job.
So we have a new co-host who's coming on for the next one.
Ooh.
Yeah, her name is Shannon and she contacted me on Twitter, so she's another writer, a romance writer, because
that's amazing.
That's what It's like librarians and romance writers on the show.
I think that that's very good.
You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks to talk about the radio job.
Bye.
All right. Bye. That I was like, well, this is all leverage related. So
we'll be so fast and so efficient. You'll be like, who even is this co-host? It couldn't possibly be Robin.
Well, I was wondering, like,